For more information on Ancient Dragon Zen Gate, please visit our website at www.ancientdragon.org. Our teachings are offered to the community through the generosity of our supporters. To make a donation online, please visit our website.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Here we are. That is, basically that's the fundamental truth. Here we are. In this place, in this moment, inseparably connected. And so we have just been practicing our ceremony of sitting together and practicing stepping away from our self-centered, self-preoccupied, selfish mind to a more open awareness of just being here, all together. Nothing special, just being here, no preferences, no likes and dislikes, no good or bad, right or wrong. Just sitting here together, becoming, just sitting here as part of the great earth, inseparably together with all beings. That practice of that open awareness, that practice of being inseparably connected with everyone in this open awareness of something Suzuki Roshi, our ancestor, the founder of the San Francisco Zen Center, spoke about over and over and over again. And he talked about Zazen, in particular, and Zen practice in general, as opening up our small mind and realizing our big mind, talking about those two different aspects, those kinds of awareness, ways of engaging with the world. So this big mind is our fundamental awareness, our original awareness that is always with us, that is there, just being right here with everything as part of the world. It's there before any thoughts or emotions or judgments arise. It's there when thoughts and emotions and judgment arise. They arise within big mind. And in contrast, small mind is a mind that Suzuki Roshi describes as always being related to something. So it's directed attention, sort of exclusive attention in a way that captures that open awareness into a focus, a fixed focus on some object of conception or perception. So it's our whole life becomes, I like that, I don't like that, I hate giving Dharma talks, why do I have to give a Dharma talk tomorrow? Boy, that was a good Dharma talk. Boy, that was a bad Dharma talk. All of those kinds of things. So, small mind splits the world up. It takes this open awareness of the world, this undivided world, undivided Buddha nature, and chops it up into me and the world, me and you, me and this thing, be in this situation, whatever we can conceive of, anything we can use a noun for, it can create this kind of duality. So small mind is the dualistic mind. Suzuki Roshi liked to talk about dualistic mind a lot, but dualistic in two senses. One is it's this division between me and whatever I experience, and dualistic in the sense that this mind is always evaluating things as good or bad, right or wrong, like, dislike, should, shouldn't. bigger, smaller, better, worse, all of that. It's also the mind of suffering, because when we become attached to this or seeking something, we're always wondering, it's the mind that's characterized by the three poisons, the three afflictions of attachment, aversion, and delusion. So we're always looking out at the world, and from the small mind, we're pursuing pleasure, comfort, security, esteem, and generating emotions based on whether we have those things, whether those things are likely, whether those things are threatened. So it's a mind of suffering. And it's not something really that we can control. We do zazen. You ask, well, then why are we doing zazen? How do we get from small mind to big mind? And that's a very good question, because our whole assumption, when we come to zazen is that we're going to learn to control or at least affect our mind in some way in order to bring about some awareness, like an awareness of big mind. We're going to become calm. We're going to have a clear mind. So we're going to manipulate the mind. And that really, unfortunately, you know, we're going to deal with some of these difficult emotions we have that come up as part of small mind. But I'm sorry to say that doesn't really work. That trying to control our mind, trying to gain some sort of special insight or state of mind, some calm or clarity, is just more small mind. It's just this craving, grasping, reaching mind, a suffering mind. And it won't work. I mean, you can try to control your mind if you want to, but the attempt to control it just is more of the same. So the question is, why is that? And what am I supposed to do? And I think really the answer is something we don't talk about too much, and that is karma. Karma, the way karma works is that any intentional action, so the action of your body or speech, thinking, feeling, desiring, leaves a trace, leaves in the philosophical Buddhist literature, it's frequently referred to as a seed that it captures that what you've done. And all of the traces of the affective parts of that experience, of that action. So if you've acted before out of a spirit of acquisitiveness or anger or fear or whatever, that's associated with that. And then as we live our lives and we encounter some situation, that can be a stimulus that activates the seed, and then the seed flowers and conditions, strongly shapes a response to that situation, impels a response to that situation and the emotions and so on. So the karma, that's before we even become aware of really are thinking of this situation. And what are we going to do? Our response flowers immediately as soon as we encounter this situation. So what can we do? And the answer is that we sit zazen. You know, the way karma works is that as you encounter situations, the seed arises and releases, let's say, its energy, expends its energy, it subsides. But if you act on that seed, in accordance with that seed. You will either refresh or that seed or create a new one over and over and over again. So that's part of what makes Zazen sort of challenging, you know? I mean, when we sit in Zazen, Zazen was a great 20th century Zen master, Kurosawaki, who used to talk about how Zazen is transparent because it's nothing. There's nothing there. There's nothing happening there. You're just sitting. You're not intentionally doing anything and nothing is going on. You're not interacting with anything. It's just there. There's no situation that, let's say, is analogous to something that might be addressed by a karmic seed that's in your unconscious. And you're not intentionally thinking. You're just sitting there and maintaining your posture, sitting there, just counting your breath, out one, out two, out three, or you're just aware of your breath. Nothing's going on. You're not doing anything. And your mind doesn't really know what to do with that, right? It starts flipping around. It's like a fish on the bottom of a boat trying to figure out what I'm supposed to do now. Karmic seeds start coming up and thoughts start coming up and emotions that can be very strong emotions, memories, planning for a next meeting or so on. Fast thinking, strong emotions, strong thinking, you know, your mind has just become a hamster on the hamster wheel. But in Zazen, we just sit with that. We just sit and count our breath, or sit and aware of our breath, sit and maintain our posture along with whatever's going on, letting whatever happen, happen. Whether that's around us, people walking around up to the altar, lighting incense, trucks going by, people sneezing, whatever. Thoughts coming and going, we let that happen. And as the karma comes, we're not acting on anything, so the karmic energy is expelled, the thoughts, desires, emotions subside, new ones come up, they expel their energy, as long as we're just sitting with it, just being open to it, not focusing on it, not resisting it, not trying to control it or suppress it. More and more of that energy, that pent-up energy, gets expelled. It's like the hamster gets tired. And the wheel starts to slow down as the hamster stops running so fast. And then finally, you have a jogging hamster, you finally have the walking hamster. When that happens, you open up, you step away, it's easier to step back from the small mind, from the whirl of thoughts that really distract you from big mind. I mean, that's what's really going on. Small mind is your deluded mind, your karmic mind. It's the mind of delusion and ignorance. Big mind is there, but you ignore it because your attention is caught by all that thinking and emotion and desires and activity that's going on, just automatic. You keep having these, what would ordinarily be reactive responses to everything, but you're not really reacting now because nothing's happening. You're just filling the void with all of this mental activity. But it slows down and it becomes easier and easier to just be aware of being right here, not caught up in the thoughts. And your mind opens up to this big mind. We can only do that, you know, the language we use all the time is letting go of thoughts and emotions and that sort of thing. And I don't really care for letting go because I keep thinking this is some intentional thing of letting go. Okay, let go. You're not going to think about that anymore. But that sort of stuff, that decision, you're not going to think about the job you have tomorrow doesn't work very well because the energy, the thought, thinking that's related to that is coming up from before you can think of it, you can sit there and go, oh, this is really big mind. This is really my big I here. This world is really my true self, the whole thing. But that doesn't really do it, right? The seeds are continue to come up and respond, but you can step back from it. And you can experience big mind even if your mind isn't quiet. You know, you'll sit there, your mind will be going wild, but then all of a sudden, here I am. And you're right there. I'm just sitting here, perfectly aware of the people around me. I can hear the sirens, I can smell the incense, I can hear the HVAC turning on and off, all of that. Thoughts are coming and going, but they're just part of what's going on. But some thought eventually, or some emotion, something will grab your attention and you're gone. You're distracted again. And that will go on until you come back. There's a gap again in your thinking and feeling and that whirling along and you're back. So our practice is, when that happens, just to say, fine, here I am. I'm ready to stay here. There's nothing required. And let it just be acknowledged that you're here. And leave the thoughts and emotions and desires and all that mental activity. Just leave it alone. Don't interfere. Don't ignore it. Don't focus on it. It's just part of what's going on here. Let it go. Let the speed of your mind dissipate. It'll become calmer and calmer and calmer, and you will open to big mind. Open to this world in which we are intimately connected with everything and everyone else in the world. And that is the mind that we aspire to act from. A mind that is not caught up. The quieter mind, the mind that is not caught up in protecting itself all the time, that can recognize that we are intimately connected with other people and to act from that intimacy. It's very simple, but it's challenging because it is not the way we normally live. We are big, there are quite a few people here that don't know. But most of us seem to be pretty analytical control freaks, I think. And so it's our first reaction when we are feeling uncomfortable and we have all these thoughts and all these emotions is to try to control that in some way. But that's not it. So we learn to just be here with everything. And the mind slows down, the volume goes down a little bit, so our thoughts and emotions and desires become more transparent and we can recognize we are here with those thoughts, emotions, desires, judgments, whatever is going on. We become even discomfort. We're willing to sit with the discomfort in order to be in that reality of the world as it is, not this little constrained world of me and my frustrating sister, or me and the garbage disposal that's not working and I'm irritated and trying to focus on fixing that. Just being in the world. So, I'm going to leave it here and just thank you for being here and urge you to come back. And while you're at home, just practice this. Just sitting there just sitting there, not trying to control anything. Just counting your breath, following your mind, maintaining your posture, and letting everything come and go without interfering with it, just leaving it alone. Wake up to Big Mind. Thank you. So, if there are observations or questions, I'm happy in the room. I'm happy to respond to those. David can tell us if somebody online has something they want to raise. Eve.
How many of the contemporary Zen masters written about or talked about Schrodinger's cat?
None that I know of.
Talked about what?
Schrodinger's cat.
Oh.
I mean, that's what came up for me like earlier this morning when I was sitting. The Schrodinger's, it's about the arguments about quantum physics and the interpretations of quantum physics. And Schrodinger had the thought experiment is there's a cat in a box and there's a radioactive particle at the quantum level, and whether it decays or not determines whether the cat's alive or dead. The Copenhagen interpretation is that the cat is neither alive nor dead, or both alive and dead, until somebody opens the box, until there's an observer that proclaims whether the cat's alive or dead. And I mean, I think there is, well, there's certainly some non-dualism involved in the superposed state in which the cat is neither alive nor dead. And that came up for me because I was trying to figure out whether democracy is alive or dead. And I ended up feeling like, okay, someday some historian is going to open the box and proclaim whether a lump democracy at this point in time is alive or dead. And at the moment, I think I'm okay with like the both or neither, but I can still act from that.
Yeah, it's an interesting question. The next time that comes up in Zazen, just let your mind go with it. Just leave it alone, though. Come back to your posture and count it.
I came back the cat.
Yeah. It's okay. Let your mind go on about the cat, but you keep counting. Yeah. Yes.
Okay.
Is that Leo? Yeah.
Thank you so much for the Dharma talk. So, Douglas. Every time, or almost every time, I'm thinking of like attending a Dharma talk, like my small mind is like, I know everything, and I don't need this, and it's gonna be boring, and it's kind of funny. And it became apparent to me that it's not necessarily like the Dharma, but more coming in contact with my small mind and the suffering that comes with it. And it was pretty profound for me. So I was contemplating as you were like saying that. And also, another observation is like when I do come to this Sangha and I'm, practicing Zazen with all of you, I think that is when like the big mind comes into the picture and takes the driver's seat. Because all of a sudden, like this idea and suffering of the small mind subsides. And almost every time I sit in Zazen, my, like, mouse, like, whatever, like, the rat in my head goes in, like, light speed. And it's really annoying, actually. But towards the end of Zazen, all of a sudden, I think the mouse gets so tired that automatically goes into, okay, you're not going to entertain the speed of light, or you can't really do much about it. I don't know like where I'm going with that, but it's kind of like an observation how coming in contact with the small minds really brings about suffering. And when I connect with other people around in the Sangha, and it doesn't necessarily happen outside of here, which is like a bigger question. But your talk today about the smaller mind and the bigger mind, and also kind of like what happens in the mind during Zazen brought a lot of like thinking and some revelations in my head. So Much appreciated.
Thank you. I think our time is probably more profitably used with more zazen than dharma talk, but
anyway. Don't tell it to my small mind.
Yeah.
Is there anyone online who has anything?
I see Brian, and I think Chris might be about to unmute.
Hello, everyone. It's good to see you, Douglas. Thanks for a great talk. You're always so clear and straightforward. I really appreciate that. I wanted to bring up something that's going to, some of you are going to be exposed to during the practice commitment period this spring, and that is the teaching of Joko Beck. And to me, the most interesting thing about Joko's teaching was that she went with what you're talking about and laser focused on getting to know small mind, the specifics of what I do out of karmic conditioning in a habitual way, and really getting to know that, especially physically in the body, so that then when that moment of contraction happens around certain kinds of thoughts, we learn over time through zazen exactly what that is. That's a little different from letting go of small mind thoughts as they arise. Mm-hmm. Douglas, you're familiar with this teaching of Joko's, and I wonder if you might comment on that distinction or that focus of Joko's.
I think, I'll give a plug for the practice commitment period coming up, because Joko's writings will be one of the aspects of the practice commitment period that's coming up. And she's very important, I think, in Zen in America. It's a big change from, I think, Japanese Zen, is her emphasis on becoming aware of emotions and thoughts and letting go always seems to me like it's some sort of, as I said, some sort of act of will and sort of a dismissive thing of letting you go so you'll go away. And Joko is much more about leaving the thoughts alone, recognize them, even labeling them. Angry about the trash disposal, whatever, garbage disposal. But so not being caught up in them, not following up on them, but being recognizing them and recognizing the reality of the thoughts and feelings. And I think that's very valuable. I think she has a phrase that some people like and some people hate about using zazen to create a bigger container for your experience, including your inner experience of thoughts and emotions and desires, and just allowing those things to arise and fall within that bigger container of awareness. Anyway, so I'm hoping that you will be giving a Dharma talk sometime about your time working with Joko. Chris, did you have something you wanted to say? Or was that a false alarm?
Well, I have... Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
The question I have that comes up for me is... And I kind of think of it as that when I'm sitting and all of a sudden I'm aware that I've been someplace else. I haven't been in the moment. And I kind of think of that's kind of coming back to big mind. Mm-hmm. The question I have is, where do I go and where did big mind go? Where did this moment go? And I know that's a strange question, but it's just sort of, it's almost like it should be there all the time, but is it just me? I've lost touch with it and I need to come back to it, and it's always there, present, or does it go someplace? Anyway, that's my question.
I guess my answer would be that it's always there. But we become distracted and caught up in the activities of small life, in those specific mental operations, thinking about things, having emotions about things, desiring things, and focusing, having that directed, narrowed, grasping attention to some aspect of our experience. So big mind is there, but we're ignoring it. And that's why I think, you know, when we talk about the three afflictions of attachment, aversion, and delusion, frequently that's translated as ignorance. You know, delusion can be the false conception of the world, false idea. For example, the idea that we are separate, independent, abiding entities could be delusion. Ignorance would be that ignoring or just being distracted from the reality of this undivided, boundless awareness and undivided, boundless world that we become aware of. So it's there, but we are turning our attention away from it.
I found that, like, if I find myself drifting away from big mind, then usually I'm either getting caught in the past or the future. So I'm either turning over something that happened to me or my response to it, or I'm thinking about what I wish is going to happen, or I'm strategizing for something. Mm-hmm. And then I might catch myself then at that point and go, oh, I totally dismiss the present. So I think even your suggestion about going back to the breath is a great way of making sure you're in the present moment, because the breath is always with us right now.
Yeah, I don't think, you know, we're not using our... There are forms of Buddhist meditation that would use concentration to sort of suppress thinking and feeling. That's not what we're doing, but being aware of the breath or the counting, I think, helps the attention stay here. It's an acknowledgement, oh, I am back here. This is big mind. And coming back to the counting, may help to support our staying here for a while. You know, we will always be distracted and we will always come back, and there's nothing we did that may bring us back. That's the interesting thing, is we come back. We're busy, we're caught up in everything else but doing zazen, and suddenly we're back in doing zazen again. So it's that, so zazen isn't something we can do, it's not something we can control, it's something that happens.
Kathy's hand is up.
Kathy.
Thank you for this talk and discussion. It's been very helpful to me. As we were all talking, I was thinking about the relationship to energy in general, and how energy is talked about so much in Taoism. But that, you know, when you're in small mind, typically the energy is more kinetic. You know, you're bouncing around. It is hard to kind of stay with your breath or just calm down. And it seems to me that there are corollaries to this in other parts of our lives. You know, for example, I'm a therapist. So when I sit with clients, it's not good if I'm thinking about my grocery list. I need to be thinking about what's going on in the room. Mm. And staying present has something to do with staying in big mind and being relaxed. And so there are other parts of our lives where I think this plays over, which has energetic qualities, which I think are interesting as well. Thoughts? I don't have a specific question. I'm just, yeah, that came to my mind.
But you, remaining in big mind allows you to be more responsive to what's going on to other people rather than using what your client might say as an opportunity to explain your agenda. I think the discipline can have practical applications as well as more fundamental ones. As far as energy is concerned, yeah, I'm not sure about how you're thinking of energy because I haven't done any Taoist practices. You know, there's some Taoist practices that are very much present in some branches of Zen, especially Rinzai Zen, especially breathing exercises. But I haven't practiced those. Thank you for your observations. Have we lost you, Kathy? You look frozen. Okay.
No, I'm here. Thank you.
You are very stable. Very stable in your little pile there. Howard.
Thank you, Douglas. I think the comment earlier about Joko Beck, but also for me, the thing that really stuck out for me during your talk was about karma specifically. And I'm reminded of Kosho Uchiyama as opening the hand of thought, which is a constant reference for me for some reason. But there's this section in the book that, this is a comment, it's not a question. There's a little cute little like diagram that he has that has like little like, this line is just big mind basically. And he describes it as like you drift off and you wake up and you come back down over there and you drift off again. And he starts like drawing weird crap, like the stuff you're just like thinking about, including like this cartoon version of, I guess, himself or something. And he makes the point, and it really struck me years ago when I read this, and I keep sitting with it, is that it's not so much that you stay on the line all the time, because that is just impossible. That'll never happen. It's the coming back is the point. That you cannot wake up unless you have drifted off in some kind of way. So I think the Joko Beck comment too earlier was nice, because suddenly like, oh no, anger is something that I can wake up with. Mm-hmm. A distracting thought that I've been, you know, going down for 15 minutes, I can wake up with that. If I have an earworm for 30 minutes, I can wake up with that, which happens to me all the time.
Oh.
But I think it's part of the karma thing, right? Like, oh, this is my karma showing up. I'm having this same damn thought again, having the same damn anxieties again. Mm. And I can meet it as it comes up. I can meet it as it's sort of works through me over time, and sort of really pay close attention to it without trying to do anything to it. And not trying to push it out the door either. And it's just like witnessing that ancient twisted karma come up over and over and over again, and giving space to myself, but also sort of has this sort of like unintended effect of also me having that compassion for other people too, mm-hmm. who are going through it. But yeah, this thought that came up. Thank you.
I'm glad to hear someone else has earworms. So, I sat an intensive practice period in Green Gulch some years ago, in which for 3 weeks I listened to Andy Williams sing the most wonderful time of the year over and over again, and I kept hearing the chorus from a song from, what, 1968, 1965 by a group called Small Faces called Ichiku Park. So, I sympathize.
I played entire albums through my head from start to finish, and I'm like, oh, wait.
Yeah, my mind desperately trying to fill in the space and entertain itself. Yes.
Oh, I'm Ruby. Thank you for this. So I was thinking a lot about how my back hurts. And I feel like I have chronic pain. But I also grew up with Buddhist grandparents in Hong Kong. And I feel like they were really obsessed with this idea of suffering and how through suffering you could become greater. So like, they would be sick but not take medicine, and they would be like, if I could endure this, then I can become a better person at the end of this. And I feel like I was kind of struggling with this for a long time, that like I would just sit with my chronic pain and then like not deal with it. And sometimes I find myself distracted during meditation because my back hurts. And like I don't know how to really divert my attention away from it, or like how to sit with it, or like if suffering is just a part of living.
I'm sorry about your back. I think you need to take care of yourself. And, you know, when we do Zazen and we feel discomfort, well, we can endure some discomfort, but real pain means something's wrong, and we need to take care of that. So, is it more comfortable to sit in a chair?
Maybe. Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, I would try that.
Okay.
Yeah. Because otherwise you spend, I think, all your time dealing with the pain. How am I going to endure this pain? How am I going to fix this pain? And so on, which isn't going to be... You could maybe injure your back, and yeah, I don't know that it's particularly productive to do that. But sitting with some discomfort and all of the responses we have that come up when we feel discomfort, that I think that can be helpful, sure. But we need to take care of pain.
Okay.
Sure. What's our time? When do we have to? So it's time? Okay. Okay, so then we will do the Bodhisattva vows and then have announcements.
In our number, we bow to free land.
Illusions are inexhaustible. We bow to conquer them. Dharma gates are boundless. We bow to merge them. Buddha's way is unsurpassable. Beings are numberless. We bow to freedom. Illusions are inexhaustible. We bow to conquer them. Dharma gates are boundless. We bow to enter them. Buddha's way is unsurpassable. Beings are numberless. We bow to free them. Delusions are inexhaustible. We bow to cut through them. Dharma gates are boundless. We bow to enter them. ways unsurpassable. We bow to realize it.